This isn't a Europe of peace. It's a Europe of division. It's a Europe of disharmony. You said Europe isn't working, so we must have more Europe.
I want what's best for Britain, and I think what's best for Britain is staying in a reformed European Union.
I think we've got a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity which will not come again.
Hello, welcome to another special programme on the UK's possible exit from the EU. Today we're going to talk about the impact on Britain of its new status in the world after a possible Brexit. Will the UK really be as strong as the Brexit campaigners believe, or will it diminish into insignificance? And is diminishing its international power a necessarily bad thing after all? What would be the impact on the so-called special relationship with America? What will be the impact on the UK's relationship with NATO? Will we stay in it or not? Joining me today is George Galloway, the British politician, writer and broadcaster, and John White, writer, commentator and broadcaster. Can we start with what Britain's ex-colony America thinks and our so-called special relationship with the US? We had President Obama coming over, and Larry Summers, who served under President Bill Clinton, said the move would represent the most isolationist deed in the last century, inflicting serious damage on the City of London. George Galloway, please, what do you think about that comment from Larry Summers?
Well, the special relationship we have with the United States is rather like the one Miss Lewinsky had with President Clinton. It's undignified, it's one way, and with the junior partner very much on their knees most of the time. And that led us into disaster, of course, in the war in Iraq and in the so-called war on terror generally, but also other conflicts that haven't yet broken out as hot wars yet, at least so far as we're concerned, like the confrontation with Russia in the Ukraine. And the drive to sanction and isolate Russia in international political and economic terms. These are all driven from Washington. And the arrogance of the American president making a special visit to Britain to instruct the natives on how they should vote in terms of their relationship to European countries is reprehensible and offensive. And I think we'll have offended many British people.
John, do your view, please. I mean, do you think that this special relationship between Britain and the US, if the UK pulls out of the EU, is going to suffer? Maybe it's going to go the other way.
Certainly not. The special relationship between Britain and the US predates the EU by over 20 years. And both sides of the argument in the Brexit debate are committed to the special relationship. The Nigel Farage, for example, toured Washington in 2015 to warn US politicians of the dangers of Britain's continuing membership of the EU, and he said during a speech, and I quote, that it raises the chilling prospect that the US would not be able to rely on its oldest, closest ally when taking on the likes of Russia. So I think I don't think at all that the special relationship will be harmed by Britain either staying in the EU or coming out of the EU. I think it's negatory in the extreme to suggest otherwise.
Yeah, but George, your view is that UK have just had enough of being bullied around by the US, right? Do you not agree slightly with John that, I mean, coming out of the EU would make actually our position perhaps even worse in that respect, because we would be a smaller fish in the European pond?
Neither I nor the British Communist Party nor the Morning Star newspaper or any of the other left-wing people on my side of the argument are lamenting over any possible loss in the special relationship. My disdain for that special relationship I hoped I'd made clear in my first answer. The truth is that the imperialist countries in the world, whether they're collected in the European Union or whether they're out of it, have a special relationship with the United States for ideological reasons. And I want to change that ideological paradigm. And the question is debatable, of course, whether we've got more chance of doing that as an independent country or as a country in a union of 28, soon to be 30, maybe 35 other countries. I personally think that we have more chance of winning a government, for example, that will reject TTIP, which has catastrophic consequences for anyone who signs it in terms of their public services and so on. We have more chance to win a government in Britain that will refuse to sign TTIP. Mm-hmm. We have more chance of doing that as an independent country rather than as a member of the European Union.
It's very interesting listening to you, George, because I'm becoming aware that UKIP is moving out, seems to be, from judging by your conversation, that we're moving out from strictly an anti-migrant campaign. You're bringing a lot of other very interesting areas, and one of the areas you brought in your first comment was about Russia. As this is a Sputnik radio programme, could we just return to that theme very quickly? And I'd like to ask your opinion, actually, John, then come back to you, George. What's your feeling about what's going to happen, you know, sanctions between the UK and Russia? If we leave the EU?
Well, I have no doubt that Britain's support for sanctions or against Russia would remain exactly the same as they are now. Britain is one of the main forces in pushing for the sanctions, and indeed it's France and Germany who are less gung-ho when it comes to sanctions against Russia, because again, it goes back to Britain's Atlantic alliance with Washington. Britain has long been Washington's bridge to Europe, and it will be keen to continue to do so. And Tony Blair did not need the EU to go to war in Iraq, the most damaging war in British history since the Boer War. And we're still living with the consequences of that war today. So the British ruling class, in total, is committed to the Atlantic Alliance, and I don't think its membership of the EU is going to affect that one bit whatsoever, which relates to the sanctions against Russia, which are being pushed most strenuously by Washington, and is a key ally of Washington in Europe. And it's determined, and the British establishment is determined to remain Washington's key ally in Europe.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point that we often don't hear over this part of the world, at least, that if Britain leaves the EU, we're more likely to become more aligned with the US policy than the other way round. But, George, you don't feel that's pretty true, I should imagine.
I don't, and we have a leadership now of the British Labour Party that is committed, at least historically, to breaking with many of the ties of the British ruling class with the United States. And I think that the possibility of an independent British government breaking those ties is, as I say, greater than the possibility of 28 30, 35 countries doing so. It's a tactical argument, an argument of principle, that I think most of the people on the left share with me.
That's absolutely factually incorrect that most of the people on the left agree with George. The TUC, most of the trade unions, Sinn Féin, and the leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, who George has just mentioned, the most left-wing progressive leader the Labour Party has ever had in my lifetime, are all supporting the Remain. So it's factually inaccurate to suggest that the left is lined up beside George. That's not true. A minority of the left is lined up in George's position, not the majority.
Well, that's not correct at all. I mentioned earlier the British Communist Party, who are no friends of
about a thousand
American
members.
Imperialism.
Yeah.
And, sorry?
We have about 1,000 members, George.
The British Communist Party, with all its tradition and with its historic position and its historic stance, is strongly opposed to American imperialism. Various of the farther left groups are also campaigning for exit from the European Union. Of course, the TUC, which is historically a plaything of the American alliance, is falling into line. But Jeremy Corbyn, whom I've known very well and very closely for 40 years, anyone who thinks he's really in favor of staying in the European Union is making a very serious mistake. His speech that he read out the other day sounded like the speech of a hostage reading out their kidnapper's demands, and that's actually what it was, because the prison guards standing over Jeremy Corbyn are the right-wing members of the Parliamentary Labour Party. I can tell you for sure that Jeremy Corbyn, if he was free to do so, would be campaigning on the same side as me.
Well, that's a very serious question.
Okay, well, that's a fascinating conversation. Let's move on, if you don't mind, gentlemen. I'm looking at it from afar, and I'm sitting in a studio in Moscow, and I talk about this whole issue with people here, and they look at me and they, well, what are you talking about? I mean, Britain, what is Britain anyway? What about our international standing? I mean, we're so convinced in our island that when we leave the EU, that we're going to be important again, like we used to be when we had an empire. But there's another side to it. Some people are saying, actually, we'll diminish into insignificance, we'll be marginalised. What do you think about that, John, please?
Well, the more marginalised and the weaker Britain is, as far as I'm concerned, the better, given our historic role in fomenting chaos and discord around the world. And unfortunately, there's so many people on the side of Brexit, the Empire Loyalists, the Union Jack Brigade. They want a strong Britain. They want to continue Britain's rule in the world, you know, riding the waves and keeping Geordie Foreigner in his place and the Fuzzy Wuzzies, etc. And this is something that we cannot ever, ever support. So Britain's role in the world has historically been a malign role. It continues to be a malign role. And anything that can be done to dilute or diminish Britain's British sovereignty, which implies patriotism, which implies nationalism, is only to the good and to the benefit for the rest of the world. And the only way to do that, I contend, is for a reforming British government led by Jeremy Corbyn, which sees the world in a different way, who doesn't see Britain as having the right to preach the world at the behest of its masters in Washington, and it wants the reorientation of British foreign policy and with it British cultural values. This is the way we should be proceeding, and that's why we need to support Jeremy Corbyn in his fight for Britain to remain within the EU.
But don't you think, I mean, you're talking of great stuff, you know, and I believe and I agree with what you're saying, but I also live in the real world, and I know as well as you do, I think, that British people are not going to want to surrender their sense of importance. I mean, if we are reduced to the status perhaps of Norway, even Switzerland, okay, we can tolerate that, but we can't tolerate if we think of Liechtenstein or something. George?
Well, Britain could never become Liechtenstein. We are a country of 65 million people.
But international standing, it could be.
I could do with a period of less so-called international standing. I could do with a period of less significance, as you put it, because significance and standing in the period since the end of the Second World War, at least, has been measured by military aggression, subservience to the United States, being an auxiliary of the United States politically and militarily, and I want out of all of that. I'd be very happy if a neutral Britain played a better and more progressive role in the world. So, in a sense, I don't recognize the premise of the question. The main question for me is that Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell's program for Britain is not doable if we remain in the European Union. Most of the things that they have correctly identified as necessary to be done for the British people will not be possible under the terms of the European Union. And Jeremy Corbyn said that many, many, many times, even if they have been now wiped from the archive, they exist. People have it. And beside them, literally, in Parliament for almost 30 years. And I can assure you that the things that he believes in, he not only continues to believe in, but believes that membership of the European Union precludes most of them.
It's really all very interesting. Let's take a short break from the news. Don't go away, listeners. The best is yet to come. Welcome back to this Brexit or Fix-It programme. Today we're talking about the geopolitical consequences of the UK leaving the EU. We've been discussing the UK-US special relationship and Britain standing in the world internationally. Now we're going to talk about trade and also NATO. I'm very pleased to have on the programme George Galloway, the British politician, writer and broadcaster, and also John White, writer, commentator and broadcaster. Do you not think there's a connection between politics and trade? And I believe that there is a tendency for countries to swing back into protectionist trade measures when they feel threatened. If the UK's international standing is diminished in any way, is there not a danger that sort of the centrifugal pull of protectionism will come back and the UK will start imposing tariffs to protect its economy?
In some cases, yes. And so there should be tariffs against the dumping of cheap steel, for example, in this country, which has devastated the British steel industry, which was once great, and laid waste to whole communities and sacked thousands of steel workers. So I don't view tariffs as some kind of dirty word. I don't view protection as some kind of dirty word. But Britain was a big trading nation before we joined the European Union in 1973. There are many markets, the rising markets of the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, Iran, and so on, with whom we could trade very successfully in the wake of exit from the capitalist club, as we always called it, the neoliberal capitalist club of the European Union.
John White, your view, please, on the protectionist argument.
Well, the protectionist argument is a very salient one because the vision of the EU under the Jean Monnet, the French political economist and diplomat, was to try and do whatever it took to forestall the possibility of yet another conflagration at the heart of Europe after the Second World War. And he saw the need to sacrifice a little bit of sovereignty on the part of the major powers in Europe in order to gain peace and prosperity and harmony. And that has by and large worked up to now. And we shouldn't be complacent over that because we've not had a major conflagration in Europe since the Second World War, largely a result of closer European unity. And it would be a mistake to think that that could never happen again. And the entire world is a capitalist club, and the EU in its present form only reflects the hegemonic status of neoliberal economics. So I don't think the inference that Britain had with the EU would itself to weaken capitalism or neoliberalism, it stands any kind of credibility. We have to look at the way can reform this country and lead to political weight to a reformation of the EU. And so the idea that Britain can't do these things, as George says, he may be right in some respects, but not in all respects. But Jeremy Corbyn, as leader of a British government, could negotiate opt-outs, just as David Cameron has done recently on welfare. We could negotiate opt-outs. We are a country of 65 million people, one of the major economies in the world today, and that brings with it negotiating power.
OK, so, John, if I believe you that you're right, so we can just roll up in Brussels tomorrow and say, a knock on the door, excuse me, can we just kind of, you know, cancel this agreement, cancel that agreement? But you know as well as I do that it's very difficult for Britain to actually negotiate and renegotiate its position on a whole range of different things, you know, from agriculture, fishery, to steel, for everything. It's very difficult. It's easy to say, but it's very difficult. George?
Cameron's dog's breakfast was the last negotiation that there will be committed by the other members of the European Union. And he didn't even try to negotiate for the opt-outs that he should have attempted to negotiate for. He brought back, as I say, the last rebate, the last renegotiation. If we don't take this opportunity to leave the EU, we will be a much weaker member of the EU forever after. That's why this is a very
But then you're saying that if he had tried to negotiate, he would have been given the opportunity to get those opt-outs? Is that what you...
He wouldn't have been given.
Okay.
The kind of opt-outs I'm talking about are anathema to him. But the European Union should not be painted as this Boy Scout organization that we've just heard described. The European Coal and Steel Community and NATO emerged at exactly the same time and for exactly the same purpose, to confront the then Soviet Union in a more effective way. There's nothing peaceful about the European Union. Most of its members have been at war over the last decades. The problem is they've not been at war with each other, but at war with others. They're at war in the Ukraine, they're at war in Libya, they're at war in Syria, they're at war in Iraq. There's nothing peaceful about them. They don't support democracy in other countries, and they barely pay lip service to it in their own countries, and only for as long as they feel that they have to.
Roach, you've moving on to military subjects, and I'd like to talk about NATO now for the remaining few minutes of this programme. Now, as we all know, America is pretty angry, I think, with a lot of European NATO countries, because we're not paying our share of the budget. And I just read in The Independent today that the MOD has been accused of fixing figures to meet a NATO budget of 2% of our national income. What's going to happen to NATO if the UK leaves the EU? John, I know you have a view on this that I find interesting.
Well, nothing. I think, conversely, the British government that comes about after Brexit comes to pass will be keen to enhance its membership of NATO to compensate for it coming out of the EU. Britain is a committed founding member of NATO, and there is no evidence whatsoever to support the view that Britain, side of the EU, would be less inclined to support NATO. On the contrary, I think it would be more keen to play a major role within NATO. And some of the major military interventions we've had have taken place regardless of the EU, i.e. the NATO intervention in Libya, the NATO intervention in the former Yugoslavia, and obviously Britain's intervention with the United States when it comes to Iraq in 2003. The EU has been a passenger in some of these major events and military interventions. certainly the EU has shown alarming, you know, move towards increasing militarisation and politicisation. But the way to forestall that is to support a strong Russia, which I do, and a reforming British government that takes a less of a warm view, a positive view of NATO, which Jeremy Corbyn does.
But don't you think that if the UK pulls out, then the UK is going to spend more money on its armed forces and generally sort of regenerate a feeling of Britain being an independent power in the world, and it's going to demand respect from other countries around the world by building up its armed forces, which, although small, they're still quite powerful in comparative terms?
Yes, indeed. Well, there's also a very fierce debate going on here right now over the future of Trident nuclear weapons, which is Britain's ticket to its permanent seat in the UN Security Council.
Okay, so then how can you have a regenerated UK armed forces and also be part of NATO? I don't understand.
Well, both are two sides of the same coin. British defence policy, as part of NATO, is reliant on its standing within NATO, so therefore it has to have a strong military defence. And NATO has obviously legislated that each member state should be looking to spend 2% of the GDP on defence. And the people who are on the side of Brexit, these are not pacifists by any means. These are some of your most fiercely committed Atlanticists and Empire loyalists. And they will be committed to Britain having a strong defence in order to bolster Britain's role in the world as they see it.
George, are you a committed Atlanticist? What's your position on this, on NATO?
Well, I think you know the answer to that. There are committed Atlanticists and Empire loyalists on both sides of this argument. But the objective reality is that Britain, if it leaves the European Union, will be taking a new direction. And I'm one of those who campaigns for withdrawal not just from the EU, but from NATO. And there are many people at top now of the British Labour Party who are in their hearts opposed to remaining in both organisations. Of course, we have a long way to go before we can win a majority of the British people for that. But the journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step, and I believe that the first step should be to leave the EU on the 23rd of June.
Right, because if NATO suffers any sort of weakening now at this particular moment in history, it does change everything, doesn't it, geopolitically? It changes the whole, almost the balance of power in Europe. And internationally, it is a hugely important moment, I think.
Indeed.
I wonder if the British public are really aware of all these arguments as we hurtle into these elections coming up now in 8 or 9 weeks' time.
Yes, well, the reality is that most people are not aware of all the arguments. What they are being treated to is a full-scale assault by NATO, by the President of the United States, by the IMF, by the European Central Bank, by the Brussels bureaucracy. All the people against whom I've stood all of my life are all weighing in, telling us to remain in the European Union.
Yeah.
And that's one, but not the only reason why I'm sure we should go in the opposite direction. We must weaken Britain's role as an imperialist country. I believe we're better able to do it on our own than in the NATO-EU capitalist club.
Well, a more pressing threat to NATO's existence comes from, believe it or not, Donald Trump right now. He has talked about NATO being obsolete and talked about and lamented the money that the US is applying to NATO and so forth. So it's not really from Britain that NATO's existence and future is set. It's actually, believe it or not, from Washington itself. If Donald Trump, he may set the winning Republican nomination and he may win the White House, though probably not. So these arguments are also taking place within the United States itself. But NATO's role will continue as long as it's supported ideologically by the political classes within Britain and within the United States that NATO is necessary to mount a defence against Russia. Now, NATO is an offensive organisation. It's not a defensive organisation, but it's been sold as a defensive organisation vis-a-vis Russia, vis-a-vis terrorism, and so on and so forth. And the way that we can weaken NATO, as I have already said, is to support a strong Russia, which is, if you consider that during the NATO operation to break up the former Yugoslavia in 1999, Russia was very, very weak. It was still recovering from the breakup of the Soviet Union. Now, if that air campaign had been planned and had been projected today, it would not have been able to be carried out because Russia today is a different Russia from what it was in 1999. So that's the way to forestall NATO's growth and NATO's influence in the world. And Donald Trump recognises that. He recognises that Russia cannot be defeated. You recognise that NATO expansion eastwards has failed. You recognise that the only way to, in order to foment any kind of stability, which the US ruling elite and the business class need, is to have better relations.
Yeah, but John, just quickly, if the UK remained inside the EU, there's very little chance of the UK leaving NATO. Surely, you agree with me on that?
Yes, but likewise, there's very little chance of Britain leaving NATO if it comes out of the EU. But there's no evidence whatsoever to support that it ever would. NATO predates the EU. Britain is a founding member of NATO, and the British establishment is fully committed to its membership of NATO.
OK, well, thank you very much indeed, George Galloway, politician, writer and broadcaster, and John White, also writer, commentator and broadcaster. Thank you very much, needle listeners, for being with us today. Fascinating conversation. Goodbye.